All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Left Curve. Today we have with us Art Abul from Wana, and today we're going to be talking about user-owned AI. So I'm very, very excited for this particular podcast episode to be recorded because, of course, Art, you are the man of the hour today. So how is it feeling for you?
It's pretty intense right now. I think we are at a bit of a moment. We obviously did an announcement last week that was pretty large in terms of being having a really big fundraise. And I think just the conversation around user-owned data is starting to pick up, which is really important for us. I think that we've been riding this kind of wave of user-owned data for a little while now, and the wave's really picking up and people are starting to understand what that means and why it's important to them and why it's important to Web3.
Perfect. That's super good. And for those of you who are just tuning in, The Left Curve is an attempt from RadarBlog to make crypto and Web3 knowledge possessed by industry experts like Art and thought leaders accessible to masses in simple terms, minus the jargon. Now, in crypto world, you know, Art, it's pretty easy to get lost in confusing information. We wanted to create something that would have helped us, Ben Bling and I, were starting out. Now, you know, Art, you and your team are democratizing AI by incentivizing supply of personal user data. And I think you guys have done a very great job at simplifying, AI contributions by the general population, leveraging crypto. Now, that's when we thought that, hey, we should perhaps give you an invite as well and call you up on our podcast as well, since AI and crypto are quite popular. And we're sure that someone in our audience would be entering into Web3 simply because of this particular sector alone. Now, before we start, of course, let me preface that none of what we say is financial advice. We're just crypto enthusiasts. Please do your own research before making any kind of investments. And allow me to explain how this podcast is going to flow. We're going to break this into two phases. We'll discuss user-owned AI briefly in the first phase and then go deeper into it during our second one. So for introductions, Art, please, I'd invite you to, please introduce yourselves to the audience as well.
Yeah, folks. Hello. Hello. Thank you so much. My name is Art. I am the COO and co-founder of Wana. Wana is a layer one that allows users to reclaim their data and collectivize around it. And why that's important is because data is the source of all intelligence that goes into AI. And right now, people's data is being used in AI without consent and without economic attribution. So what that basically means is large platforms are using your data in AI without you getting a cut of it. And we want to change that. We want to allow people to be able to access the ability to take their data and monetize it in AI and do that with blockchain incentives and to allow for that to kind of grow into a system where we all own a piece of AI and large language models. I guess a bit of background about why I came to this. I used to be in data sales, and then before that I was a lawyer. And then I also did research in kind of human research studies. Data is incredibly valuable, incredibly powerful in terms of just understanding how humans do things, even more powerful with AI. And when I was in data sales, the market is just absolutely, it's a mess on both sides. People can't access real data and users are not rewarded for their data. So that's really kind of what brought me to this. And my co-founder, she's a genius. She comes from the blockchain world. And so we thought we would come together and actually try to solve this problem and try to create new markets for data and AI.
Super interesting. Lingo, do you want to go next?
Yeah, first of all, I didn't know the lawyer part and so many interesting things that you've done. First of all, that's super refreshing to hear. Like, we have people in crypto coming from like different backgrounds. I don't see it comes from psychology. I come from electrical engineering. It's pretty crazy. So yeah, it's kind of like a weird bunch that we've gotten here and like so much interesting stuff that we've been doing. But first of all, congratulations on the announcement. We know that you guys did like a way big raise and it has been like way well received by the audience, but super excited to see like how this translates into what we're building at Wana in the future. So excited for your journey. As for myself, so my name is Blingo. I'm the co-founder of RadarBlog. RadarBlog is a Web3 native growth marketing agency. We've been in the market for 2.5 years, helping like different protocols scale their growth. So we kind of attach ourselves to these teams and identify what's like the growth funnel. And as you can see, like the whole growth funnel in Web3 has been changing ever since. So what started with points maybe 2 months ago has translated into more of like founder-led interest coming in. So it's never the same. So you can never think of like one answer to like marketing in Web3. And all of us just came back from Token 2049, which kind of saw that, okay, it seems like the trends are changing where the market is getting more aware and we're seeing like more interest in the intersection of AI and crypto, which makes Wana like just the right focus for us to have this conversation right now. But that's just a bit about myself. I think I'll let Adonis go now and then we can go from there.
Yep, guys, I think Lingo already gave like pretty much a decent background of your blog, but I'm the other co-founder. My name is Adonis. I usually look after most of the execution and day-to-day stuff. I think one thing that we are always trying to do at Rarablock is to identify, okay, this project belongs to this particular sector. Now, how can we make sure that it's one of the top projects in that particular sector, right? Because we are like big believers in the idea of sector rotation. We know that each sector will have its day. And what most people get wrong is that they try to become the top dog when it's the moment of that sector. At that point, it's just super noisy at that point of time. But since we're talking today about, you know, Wana and data in particular art, and you mentioned that you come from a background of data sales, that actually got me really, really excited. So let's just start off from there that, you know, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Because you mentioned you come from data sales and how like on both sides of the equation, the story was pretty bad. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. One little known fact about the way that people's data is being bought and sold, so your data is being bought and sold, is that it goes through a very small group of companies whose job is basically to broker all of the available data in the world with all of the available demand in the world. And they don't do a great job of this, and I'll tell you why. So the standard process is, say, a large tech company will go to one of these data brokers. There's probably like 10 or so of them. And they'll say, hey, I want this specific data set to train a model, run insights or whatever. And that data set is typically something that you can't scrape, because why would you go and pay a lot of money to buy data that you can scrape? You wouldn't do it. So these folks are trying to get really deep data, like what is this person's Spotify music preference and how does it relate to their purchasing history? These kinds of data are very difficult to find. You, on the other side, where the company comes in, the data broker, is they try to source this data. So they go out to the market and they do basically a research field collection. If anybody's done research, you basically scope out a methodology and go and try to find the data that you want. The challenge is that they typically can't get a good sample of the population, because what they're doing is they're going out there to market and saying, hey, I want to get some really personal data from you. I'll give you a few bucks for it. And people are like, okay. The majority of people are like, no. And then some people are like, oh, okay. But that's a very skewed sample of people. So when that data is packaged up and given to the company that wants to buy it, you have poor data. So on both sides of the marketplace, you have this suboptimal kind of player in the ecosystem that prevents exchanges from happening. The use case that I kind of give folks is, you know, some folks might have been touched by a health condition, like say like cancer, or somebody in their family might have been. And I think if you asked them and said, hey, would you contribute some of your medical history to create an AI model that could help solve cancer, they'd be like, of course, I'd happily contribute that data. But the existence of this middleman in the marketplace prevents that free exchange from happening. And that's what we're trying to break down here at Wana, to try to make, to use on-chain incentives to build enough trust in that ecosystem to create a more decentralized marketplace where a buyer and seller can meet each other and actually create good technology. And that didn't exist in the data sale space. I'll just add one thing, and I'll say that on the data sale side of things as well, each of these large companies, obviously, they don't have infinite capacity. So there was a minimum check size in terms of the amount of data they were willing to source for someone. And they were typically high. So like you're thinking in the orders of hundreds of thousands of dollars, they'd say any contract smaller than this, I'm not going to accept. That really priced out some really cool projects, like startups, like research institutions, like people who just had a vision to create some kind of socially progressive technology or things that could really help society. They are priced out of the existing data market right now. So I always think about like what kind of technology are we blocking because of this ineffective system of data exchange that exists today, and how can Wana really help to liberalize that, to try to create more ways for people to buy, sell, and use data, and people to use that data to train AI.
Really, really amazing, Lingo. Go ahead. I was just like really moved by, you know, Art's connection of you know, cancer is a health condition to how, you know, how the free flow of data is so important. Because when we talk about it in an abstract sense, of course, people will say, yeah, go data freedom. But when you link it like that with like a health condition, it becomes quite more sophisticated by at least a few orders of magnitude. But yeah, go ahead, Bingo.
I think I would love to ask more questions around the main gap. So from what I understand, it's more around matchmaking for these data points. Like the data exists everywhere out there. And at the end of the day, there's no like aggregation layer that kind of connects every data point from like one to another. So would you say some of the main challenges in terms of like what we're doing right now is more on the side of matchmaking and providing like touch points to each ecosystem? Or would it be more around sampling, inferencing, collection of the data or the methodologies that come to the space from there?
Yeah, I would actually say the overall system is really inefficient. So that isn't just about sampling. It's not just about collection. It's this idea of it's a standard matchmaking problem in a marketplace when you have information asymmetry on both sides. That's economic terms. But basically, if someone wants to buy and someone wants to sell and their prices overlap, you should have an economic transaction. And the fact that there is no economic transaction is an economic inefficiency. One challenge, and I should explain this, is that data brokers or these kind of middlemen play one really critical role, but it's a role that I think that the blockchain can play, and that's aggregation. So when somebody says, I want a data set, they're not saying I want a piece of data. The reason why they're outsourcing it is because they don't want to go out there and collect 10,000 pieces of data to train their model. They want somebody else to do that job. And so these kind of middlemen will go in and actually collect all of that data. They will employ teams of field collectors and checkers to actually centrally collect that data. So they're one key kind of focal point with whom the data buyer or the data demand can contract. Now, what we can do in Web3 to kind of create a similar kind of system without having a middle person is to create tokens around a specific data set. So somebody might say like, hey, I really want that Spotify data paired with your fashion data or paired with your purchase history. Awesome. Let's create a token around it. Let's get people to buy into the token using their data. So they're contributing their data capital. And then that data set can then be used to satisfy that demand. And it's one amazing thing about blockchain that allows for this to happen of collectivization, which is really critical to data economics because one data point is not worth that much. A lot of data points together is worth a lot. So I would say that's one thing that the middle broker does provide in the marketplace, but that's something that we can also do in Web3.
Super interesting. And I think that when you mentioned something along the lines of, you know, the collectivization, the end output is much bigger and much better than, you know, just simple individuals trying to, you know, get their data together. So aggregation definitely is something that, the blockchains can definitely help with. And I'm pretty sure, Art, that when you started out, you saw that there were a lot of gaps, which at that particular point of moment, perhaps could not be solved by the blockchain as well, right? So when you were starting out, what was the landscape like for AI and crypto, right? Like this intersection, what did that look like? What were the different AI products at that particular point of time, you know?
So just a clarification, when I was starting out, so when we started building Varna or when I was starting out in the space of like data collection, data sales?
I would say go ahead.
More on the Varna side, because we're trying to understand, like when you were just starting out, you did like a lot of landscape analysis. Okay, these are the products that are being built. Maybe they were agents, maybe there was like someone doing inference. What was happening around the AIX crypto space at that time?
Yeah, that's a really funny story. So Anna and I came to this quite early. Both of us are massive nerds. We actually met at MIT. I was studying down the street at Harvard. She was at MIT. So we had this philosophy of like, how can we make technology better and how can we make people kind of participate in it? And blockchain was just a technology that could potentially solve this problem. And so we did actually investigate different other types of technologies to solve this kind of problem of data demand exists here, data supply exists here, how do we connect them? Everything from creating experiences with AI to paying people actual money. And then we actually found that blockchain was the optimal solution. So it's an interesting thing because if anybody tells you, oh, look, I'm going to solve the data layer for AI and they've been working on it for 3 months, I really challenge them to actually build something of value because this is a much harder problem. than people kind of give it credit for. The idea of like, oh, easy, we can just get people's data and contribute it to AI. That's a really easy problem. I think in concept, very easy, very accessible. Like, I think most people would understand it. But in practice, how do you actually create economic incentives to get a balanced data set to the person who wants that data set? How do you actually match that specific data niche with that specific data demand or supply? When we were entering into this space and did a landscape analysis, we saw the big Web2 giants, so the big data aggregators. We didn't see any Web3 companies trying to do this. Maybe at small scale around specific niche data sets, but nobody trying to build the entire kind of ecosystem for this. And then we saw a bunch of Web2 companies kind of focus on the privacy point. And we did experiment with that. We kind of went, okay, like, let's see how privacy interacts with that. I'm happy to go into it in great detail, but the idea is that people like the idea of privacy, but it doesn't give them enough value to inconvenience them. And that's really not the angle that we want to take. I think that is kind of the landscape that we saw when we approached this problem. But I will say that, like, in terms of building out the entire ecosystem, it's been a lot of kind of deep thinking and deep research. We actually developed the patents that basically stand up this ecosystem. Vana holds them. We actually developed them in 2022 because we wanted to invest so much in this ecosystem that creates this kind of fair data marketplace.
Very interesting. And I think I'm already understanding how, like, privacy is like a double-edged sword when it comes to data, because, like, from my perspective, sometimes I just keep Instagram ads, like, I allow them to track it because, like, it gives me, like, more targeted results to what I want. Somehow the algorithm knows that, okay, maybe, like, and if I can connect that to Spotify, like, I remember back when I was in college 3-4 years ago, one of my juniors wanted to build, like, one fashion consulting company where it tells you that what's the fanciest thing you should wear today and outfit creation. So maybe if that can be fetched from, like, Instagram data and, like, Spotify based on, like, what music I'm listening, I think that would be pretty cool. So I think we've kind of covered everything that goes into, like, phase one, that is, like, more of intro of Vana, you, and, like, what we're doing in this space. So we'll kind of dive deeper into, like, the whole democratization of AI, right? So we've been talking about, like, different data sets and, like, how we can fetch them. There's this idea of data DAOs that you guys have brought along. So what are these data DAOs? Who can start these? Who can contribute? How do we get into one of the data DAOs? I think DAOs have been the popular realm of, like, Web3 from the beginning, but this is, like, a new take at it where we've gotten, like, a refreshed mindset to how we perceive data and DAOs together. So we'd love to know more about this.
Yeah. So the simple definition of a data DAO is a group of people who've come together around a specific data set or a specific topic related to data. Why is that important? So as I mentioned, one piece of data is not super valuable, but aggregated, that is very, very valuable. Why else is it important? Well, if I'm going to participate, if I'm going to give you my data, I want to have some sort of say in how that aggregate data set is used. And so what the data DAOs do is they reward you commensurate to the amount of data or the amount of value you're adding to the data set. And a lot of people find this model, and we found this in experiments, that people find this model a lot more fulfilling than the idea of give me $25 of my data or give me $5 of my data. Because for them, that it's not necessarily about the pure economic upside. They do want some ownership in what that data goes to produce. That's kind of the genesis of user-owned AI. If you collectively own the data set in a data DAO, you collectively control what that data set goes into. And theoretically, if the DAO wanted to, which some of the DAOs have, they can create their own AI models and then start to create economic value from the models and not just the data itself. So the data DAOs are really the core of this infrastructure of user-owned, because data is such a core input to AI. And the data DAOs allow people to aggregate in a fair way where people feel comfortable contributing their data because they're able to get governance of the overall data set.
Very interesting, Art. And, I think this allows for great contribution to AI and, you know, bringing down the current walls that exist in the AI sector as a whole. I want to understand, like, how is a retail audience who's perhaps listening to this podcast, how can they benefit from this? How can they leverage it? Like, maybe they're hearing this podcast, they're like, okay, so this means that I can get paid for my data, which I generally share without any kind of incentive. Like, how do I get into this?
Yeah, correct. So there's a couple of layers of this. So you asked the question of, can you get paid for your data? The answer is yes, you can earn economic rewards because your data has economic capital. In the system that we've created, which is called capitalism, if you're creating something of value, you should have some sort of payoff out of it. So you've actually generated a lot of data capital. One common question that I get is, well, can Facebook sell my data? It's like, well, yes, because you've given them a license to sell your data, but that doesn't mean that only they can sell your data. You should also have the ability to sell your data, and you do that by exercising your legal rights, which you have on all platforms that you use. You never give up these legal rights. They can't let you give them up. But you have the legal right to take your data off that platform and do with it what you want. It's your content. It's the thing that you've produced. That's your intellectual property. That's your data. So you're able to take it off the platform and then contribute it to whatever you decide to do. So that could be a data DAO. That could be anything else. The data DAOs are good because they really let you unlock the value of it because you can pair it up with a bunch of other people. But you can do that. One slight distinction here is that when Facebook sells your data, or when one of these big platforms sells your data, they are constrained in terms of what they can actually do. They have to anonymize your data. They have to filter your data through all of these various things because they have regulatory standards that they need to comply with in terms of AI and data, especially if they're trying to sell it to another platform. They do have to provide some level of disclosure to you. One little anecdote is that when I was working in data sales, large platforms would sometimes buy their own data because they needed to get express consent from their users, and they didn't want to be the ones to ask for it. So they would contract that out to a third party who would buy that data. And the reason is because unless they get your explicit consent, they can't actually do some things. But you can. So you can download your entire data set, and with a group of people, you can really kind of create something amazing. And maybe the best example that I can share with you is back to that kind of cancer example, where there are incredible barriers to transmitting health data across company and across border in the United States and the EU, which makes it really inefficient for a company to buy and sell that kind of data to a research institution that might do something really good with it. But individuals are not constrained in the same way. So they can take that data, they can collectivize, and then they can provide that data set to folks that might actually use it. So that's kind of the advantage that you have. The power that you have as a user, a retail user, is that you could actually create something, a data asset, that is more valuable than anything that these Web2 companies can buy and sell on your behalf. And if they're making $250 million a year off it, think about how much you could make off it.
Interesting. So I have a very interesting follow-up question for you. So let's say we're talking about like individuals doing a lot of these activities in terms of like how you envision the VANA ecosystem and the data DAOs. Do you see a future where an operator comes into play? And maybe I'm kind of mixing it with like EigenLayer a bit, but my idea is that do you see someone who's like a third party who's like collecting data from various data points and acting as an intermediary as a data DAO? Someone, is that something that you envision maybe perhaps? Because I would love to see that. I want to contribute all of the data, but maybe all of the people don't know how to use these data sets and like contribute to these data platforms. So maybe there's like one intermediary data DAO that's coming in and kind of collecting like various platforms and putting it on VANA. Is that something that you envision?
It's not just something that we envision. We actually have it in the ecosystem right now. So this is a little bit of alpha for your listeners, but there is an entity in the ecosystem that exists to aggregate data. One of the key challenges that a lot of Web3 data style platforms have struggled with is how do we monetize this data? How do we actually sell it? And I think one of the challenges is they don't have somebody on their team that's worked in data sales. So that's just like an operational challenge that they have. But one of the key barriers to this, because you know, I rang up my old friends and I was like, hey, you know, would you or your clients buy this data? They're like, yeah, for sure. Like that's a huge thing for us. Like we would happily. But we don't want to buy it from a Web3 company. And I think that's the key, the clincher here. You need to find a way for there to be almost like a Web2 interface, because AI people, I mean, I'll just be frank, AI people don't really like crypto right now. And so you need to create a way for them to access this and to realize that there's actual value in this. An AI person would rather go to Kaggle because it's known for providing data sets, even if the data set isn't what they want. But if we start to bridge this kind of AI crypto gap and we start with data because that's the thing that actually creates a competitive advantage in the AI they're building, that's where we have a real entryway to actually create a bridge between AI and crypto that I think people don't realize doesn't actually exist right now. There's a massive, massive chasm between AI and crypto. And at Varna, we're trying to bridge it. So this entity called TensorSource has aggregated millions of dollars worth of data demand. They exist within the Varna ecosystem, and they play the role of what we call kind of like a data market maker. So making sure that data demand is communicated to the data DAOs, and that data DAOs can kind of grow in response to some of the market forces that are asking for this data to come in. I will also just add one small thing to this, and it's that data DAOs can create their own demand. They can create their own models, which these models could be useful. And so I think we also need to kind of break away from the shackles of the standard, get a data set, give it to AI, and say, like, get a data set, collectively create something of value, create technology together, really back to the Web3 ethos of let's do this all together. I think we're trying to see that at the data layer for AI as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you bring up is super important, especially the part where you said that not a lot of AI folks are that interested in crypto, right? Or they don't want to take it from like a crypto organization. This space definitely gets like a bad rep. And, you know, I was looking something up just like we started recording this, and, you know, you'd be so amazed to see that there's like $30 billion worth of market cap in here in the AI coins and all. And yet we're at a position right now where data is such a big problem. So it's almost like if you look at it from an investor point of view, you're like, oh, wow, all the coins are green. I'm so happy. But from a grassroots perspective, there's still so much work that still needs to be done on the infrastructure side, and simply on getting the confidence of people who are already in AI and are just struggling to convince themselves to pivot at this point and like actually go into, you know, crypto. But yeah, go ahead, Lingo.
I think like from my side, I'm just thinking that, okay, why is Datablock not starting like a marketing DAO already? So we're like marketing data DAO. We can collect all the marketing information from like all of our clients. We get like clearances from Art and a bunch of us get like that going. I think I would personally love that. But that happens to like the next question, right? Like, what are those data DAOs that you envision someone should be building right now, but they're not in the ecosystem? So we'd love to understand, like, what is something that you want community to listen to and say that, okay, I want to start building with Varna, and this is what might be the market gap right now.
Yeah. So I'll actually teach people how to fish in this this response, because I think people can identify the data gaps themselves. If anybody's used an AI tool and you've been like, oh, this is kind of cringe, or there's like a, this doesn't hit the right spot, that's where there's a data gap. When the non-performance of an AI indicates that there's a gap in the data that's been used to train it. I got on the phone with one of my friends last week who works at one of these companies, and I said, what are some of the big projects that you're currently unable to collect data for, or you've had to say, we can't take this contract? And one of the ones is actually conversation, like not this kind of conversation, which will probably be edited and hopefully be kind of a little bit more polished, but like, you know, those intimate conversations that you have with people that are not really kind of public, they're kind of private, either in voice or in like chat, like that kind of stuff is actually really hard to get. So everybody talks about scraping and public data. That's all good. That's already gone into AI. And the reason why there's a gap is because none of this public data has any of these private conversations. So when you chat to ChatGPT or when you chat to Claude, they have to do some serious prompt engineering. So basically they have to prime the model to try to get it to sound really human, because otherwise it sounds like a marketer shilling content on the internet, because that's what it's trained on. So one of the big data sets, I think one of the big ones right now is actually private chat messages or private voice recordings. And another one is private video recordings, because a lot of the video models are trained, again, on the public internet. All of those videos are super edited, whether they're on TikTok or like on YouTube or whatever, they are really edited. So it's hard to get realistic video to come out of an AI model because it doesn't have the data to show what realistic video looks like. So you'll never get realism in an AI video model. So to your users, to the audience here, it's basically think about whenever you use an AI tool and whenever it's failed on you, you could probably trace back what the data set that's missing is based on how it's failed or why it's failed.
Very interesting. And I believe that this was simply like the data outside of the equation. But Art, if you were just starting out right now in the AI space, and let's assume that, okay, you're not building or you're not focusing on Mono right now. As an AI crypto enthusiast, what would you like to see people build in this space? Considering they're starting out, they're probably coming from AI background or, you know, data background. What would you think is like an interesting thing to build out apart from the data labs?
Yeah, it's apart from data. That's a really tough question because I've just been so obsessed with it for so long. You know what I've really, I think that's really important. This might be adjacent to the data problem, but applications that are usable, I think that we struggle to think about the application layer a lot in Web3 because we're just like, oh, it's just like a terrible experience. That's just the way it is. It's like, no, it doesn't have to be. And we've done all of this optimization and all of this innovation around infrastructure, around scaling and all of this stuff. But it's like, when you get that app in the hands of someone who doesn't know Web3, they're like, what the hell is a wallet and why am I signing this transaction? Like all of this kind of application, the joy that folks can have when they interact with Web3. I think that we can do better as a community to build that. And I'm really excited to connect kind of Web3 technology to people who are more used to like Web2 kind of UX patterns, but also just like, maybe a sub problem to that is thinking like, let's not manufacture problems that Web3 can solve for. Let's actually identify ways in which Web3 gives people an advantage. So like in data, it's the aggregation piece and the traceability piece, but like, how can we give people an advantage with Web3 blockchain technology and give them a consumer facing thing that actually makes their lives better? It's a kind of broad statement, but basically Web3 applications that make lives, people's lives better is what I want to see built. And that's what I would do if I was back in this space again, not building data.
I think like a bunch of our friends at Socket and a few other protocols would love to hear this because a lot of them have been like focused at solving the whole UX space. So they've been doing interesting stuff on the chain abstraction side. I would love to see like how we envision the next leg of like chain abstraction working together with AI agents and how it kind of does like more seamless transactions. Recently, we also did see like agent to agent swap happening. So a lot of interesting things are happening in the space. Like we're core DeFi builders, so we're always like nerding around those things, but definitely interested in how the whole AI landscape has been changing. But I think this has been like a super fun conversation, Art. Like we'll ask you like the last question from our side. We ask this to everyone. So okay. Who is that Chad you want us to bring over here at the Left Curve podcast? Because like we see that this is like a good blockchain kind of inference that we've gotten, like, okay, Art said this guy and we kind of go to the next one, so on and so forth. So who's that one person you want here?
Okay, so mine's probably, I don't know, maybe you can get him, but I do want you all to speak to Sam Altman. Because I think it's really important. I mean, I guess he's Web3 because of WorldCoin as well. So like I tick that box, but I want to genuinely ask him, like I personally want to ask him, like, where do you feel like you have the right to use people's data without their consent to create a model and not give them any financial return from it? Every single person listening to this podcast should have a little slice of ChatGPT, in my opinion, because we probably produce public internet content and that content's gone into that model. So like, I genuinely want to ask him, like, how does he kind of square that circle as somebody who I believe is actually really ethical and really kind in the way that he approaches things? Like, how does he square the circle of basically taking data from people and using it to advance AI without people getting compensated for it?
And I think that kind of resonates with the whole, ethos of like Web3, right? Where you said, we started with this idea of giving back to the users and we've come like full circle in terms of AI that, hey, now we're using AI and how do we get it back to the users, which kind of ties into like what Vanna is doing, which is why we're fans of what you're doing, which is like bringing back that user-owned AI funnel back into the picture. So super nice having this conversation, Art. I think like we all have some key takeaways from like this whole conversation. I think for me, it has been that I want to take control of my data and find like marketplaces like Vanna where I can just go and sell my Spotify data. I'm a big music geek, so I'm pretty sure this is like good data that I can give back to it. I want to translate that into how it goes into Instagram Reels data, because I'm pretty sure my playlists right now are like resonating with some of the techno reels that are going on Instagram. So I think like that's just my personal takeaway from here. I would love to see what Adonis and you think about this conversation. But yeah, definitely mine is like my Spotify data when it comes to like blockchain, I'm going to be like giga rich. I'm pre-rich right now, but when Spotify data DAOs are live, I'm going to be super rich.
Yeah, so Art, please take a lead on this one. I'll go last.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's a really cool takeaway. I think that that was actually a data collection that we did in our early days, Spotify data paired with fashion data. So back in those days, there was a client of ours who really wanted to predict fashion trends, and music was an early predictor of it. So they wanted to be able to create products so that it would hit market at the right time. And so they would actually take that data. So I would say that data is incredibly valuable, especially paired with other data. My big takeaway from this, and it's just something that came up when you pulled up that chart of the other AI projects that are doing well, it's that Varna can really be a bridge between Web 2 and Web 3 right now, because we're offering something in Web 2 that doesn't exist, and it's really deep user data. And so a lot of these kind of AI folks that are kind of like, crypto, once they see the power of the data that we're able to collect, and we've spoken to some of these professors at MIT, they're like, you collected what and how quick? Like, they will be like interested in crypto, which is actually going to be better for the entire ecosystem, because if they're interested in crypto for data, they'll be interested in Web3 for compute and inference and all of these things. And we start to bring about a movement. So I actually, you know, I'm not trying to big note the project, but I do think we have a critical role to play here in terms of actually building that bridge between AI and Web3, because data can give such an advantage to the folks in AI.
Yeah, and I think my key takeaway would be that, you know, it's the problem of I couldn't ask because I couldn't know. So a lot of people do not even know that they could be paid for something like this. It's like, wow, OpenAI has given me such a good gift without actually realizing that, dude, you paid for the bill for it. So not a lot of people actually realize that. They're just like, oh, I have the finished product. It's okay. I'm going to be happy with this. What now we are envisioning is how we can go ahead and make them a part of the financial aspect of it as well. That every time somebody's using your data, A, you can see it transparently being used. B, you get paid for it as well. And C, you get clubbed together with other people who are perhaps also big fans of that particular aspect or that particular sector of your life, which you're providing data for. So technically, you're also getting community as a byproduct of that, right? You're also getting friendships and, you know, lifelong discussion points as well. So I think those would be my key takeaways from this. And if you love the show as an audience, please do give us a follow at RadarBlock and on our accounts, which are 0x Adonis Cyril and Bingo No. Make sure you follow our guest Art as well at RDArt88. And that is all from this particular episode. Cheers, everyone, and have a good day.
Thank you.